Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Before we begin this episode of The Boardroom, just let you know, there is every chance we're going to be talking about kind of storylines that involve possibly suicide, bit of self-harm, bit of depression, all of that serious stuff. So if you don't want to listen to that, if it's triggering for you, then don't listen to this episode. And obviously you can go to Samaritans.org or just call 116 123 for free. Welcome to previously on Succession, The Boardroom, episode 8. I've got to confess, like, I normally start with some semblance of like structure. I've got like pithy names for Chris and Grace. I have to say, after watching that, I don't even know where to begin. I've not planned anything. All I know is that Chris is making his children test his food. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. I'm fizzing away over here like a bottle of cheap Prosecco.
Lovely. And Grace Dent, as ever, is just wondering how to turn down another marriage proposal.
I'm a million years old, but I'm still up for seeing an occasional dick pic.
Oh, there we go. Welcome, the pair of you. goodness gracious me. Let's address the elephant in the room. I squealed, I screamed, I yelped out loud. All of a sudden, Succession was being run at 33 and a third RPM, and it was a car crash in slow motion. That for me was a bigger shock. The Roman Logan sexting was a bigger shock to me than when Kendall turned on Logan at the end of season two. It was phenomenal. Where do we begin? Just as a piece of
Jamie,
like
I love the fact that you just keep saying what because that's how we all feel right now, don't we? I'm a bit lost.
We have to suspend a bit of disbelief because there is no way that quality picture was taken on an iPhone 13 Pro Max. It would have had a lot more definition, a lot more clarity. And I would imagine the bulbous nature of Roman's bell end would have been quite a deep purple on with such a good phone.
I think we all know now that Roman's penis is as angry as he is. He is almost all the time.
His penis looks a lot like him.
We have been discussing this already, haven't we?
On the WhatsApp group.
The only thing I would say now, I only watched the episode once. My recollection though is the dick pic was taken not from Roman's point of view. It was from the other way around.
I thought it was taken. What do you call a selfie if it's of a penis? I don't know. But he kind of, he'd held the camera out and it was kind of spilling out of his pants, wasn't it?
Calvin's as well.
I'm saving myself till marriage, but what I understand is most people take it from the phone is between them and the penis.
I guess it depends how long your arms are, doesn't it?
And Roman is not, if Roman had Skarsgård arms, fine. But he doesn't.
Before we get on to Skarsgård,
I tweeted something this afternoon, which was, where do TV shows get dick pics from?
Yes.
No one has responded. I actually DM'd someone who works on Succession to ask them, and he didn't know. And if anyone does know, let me know, because how do you get an image like that for?
It must have been a stunt dick.
Do you know something? Can I just say, although we have all laughed about this dick pic, and it's funny and it's ridiculous, yeah, and it's an amazing plot point, I still absolutely love that this was the first time I've ever really seen the mentality behind sending unsolicited dick pics actually properly discussed in a drama. Mm-hmm. And although it kind of was a laugh, when he had to sit down with his father, that's the question. Logan was asking the questions that, you know, women, and I'm sure men too, ask as well. Like, why do you do this? Why? No. And I don't want the funny answer. Why do you do it? And if you think about it, Roman had been specifically told, stop sending me these. Yeah. So, you know, this dick pic, it was unsolicited. It was without consent. And it was a symbol of how Roman has kind of gone to a bad place. Yeah. He's not funny Roman now, is he? I mean, and I love Roman. He has been my favorite person through all the series. And if he was my friend and I'd stuck with him this far, I'd be distancing myself now, because there's a nasty side, isn't there? And I thought the dick pic, although it was a comedy device, it was a chance for the writers to say, yeah, you know, that he's not right in the head now. And you know, yeah, and the fact that when it was discovered, him just, you know, his reactions to it and trying to
his face. I mean, it was incredible acting from Kieran Culkin.
I think he needs an Emmy just for that.
Beautiful,
you know,
because
that
we've all done that face. Oh, obviously, God, not from sending a mistaken dick pic, but it's how do I unsend this email face? That's what it is.
But you know the judder that it gives you, that to be able to, that, you know, when you send an email, you suddenly realize you've replied all, and maybe you haven't, but in those, what do you think is 0.2 of a second?
Yeah.
And it gives you like almost like an electric shock to the
heart.
I don't know how Roman did that. You know, I mean, the actor, sorry, what's he called? Kieran. I don't know how Kieran produced that, because we've been sending each other pictures all day, haven't we, of like things that we've seen online. And I sent that picture, that freeze frame of his face. It's like almost like his complexion changed.
Yeah. It's the face. He articulated the face of a man's scrotum disappearing inside his own body.
And I think it played out. It felt like it was happening in slow motion, like a car crash, because we saw that he sent his dad Logan texted him. He accidentally sent the dick pic thinking he was texting Jerry. And then we heard the phone go off camera, out of shot. And then you look and he's looking and Jerry's phone hasn't gone off and he's trying to figure out. And the thing is, if he'd sent that to almost anyone else in that room, he could have got away with it, because Roman's been Roman. Like, he just is him and it's everyone else's problem. But
he's not accountable to anyone else apart from his dad.
And I'm really interested, like, I mean, is this going to be his undoing? Like, Logan seemed disturbed on like a level.
On a whole level.
I've never heard him shout that loudly before.
But wasn't this just so symbolic of exactly where we are with Roman? We forgive whatever he does. And then just on these last two episodes, Shiv has been saying, why do you keep making jokes about having sex with me? It's not okay. I don't find it funny.
Yeah.
And it's the joke that's gone on a bit too far. And then with the dick pic, you could see people going, oh, well, it's just him, isn't it? It's just him. That's his personality. It's just, and then they're all struggling going, but actually, if you think about it, it's not okay. No. If you wanted to inject one of the feelings straight into my veins for the next week, it was seeing Jerry go from normal Jerry, who has been quite affable of late, to just getting her head on that she knew exactly what Shiv was doing. From the moment Shiv got her in that the corridor, and she just said, have you had these pictures before? And she looked her straight in the eye and said, I do not recall. And I was like, oh, go on, Jerry. You can't fire me for this, you know.
Let's take a step back.
Yes. So,
because what is a hilarious kind of like, you know, Phil and Sharon in the Vic hearing their affair being played out over the PA kind of shock moment. Mm. Actually, they've used this device, this kind of like almost comic device, as probably the kind of plot twist of the season, because it's done a number of things. It's spelled the end of Jerry as CEO, almost certainly. It has possibly saved Shiv from the brink of everything that she's been going through for the past four or five episodes. It's thrown Logan into complete disarray in terms of who he was favoring, because Shiv was out, then all of a sudden she was Pinky again. And it could have maybe possibly even potentially salvaged, offered something to Kendall should he want it, because now Logan is without, or can't possibly kind of back the only guy that who was supposed to have brought Skarsgård on side, and even that looks absolutely sure. That was the bit that I didn't really understand so much, which I guess we'll kind of delve into. But on that plot point, where does it leave things? Where does it leave Logan?
The thing is, sometimes week to week, you kind of get something comes along and you're like, oh my God, this is going to change everything. And the show is so good at just going, actually, no. See, yeah. For example, the FBI raiding Waystar, or Tom going to jail. This could go one of two ways. It could be the end of the line for Jerry. The end of the line of the Jerry-Roman alliance could see the end of Roman standing at the company. But I could also see Shiv blowing this as well, because she's not as smart as Jerry, and Jerry's been by Logan's side for decades. And I kind of don't know if she's going to get chucked out. But so I'm not sure, but I do think Shiv, I thought it was amazing how she really got Jerry on the spot and was like, look, we can't have, if you can't even sort out sexual harassment at your level, you shouldn't be in charge. Like, she went for the jugular in this episode. Shiv yeah. just went for it. And I respected that, but also there's an element in me that's like, you can't outplay Jerry. I mean,
no.
So I'd be really intrigued whether this is going to be a sort of pivotal moment, because I don't know who's going to come out of it worse.
But presumably Logan had booted her out. That was why she was off. Was that not it? Was she going back into the meeting?
I thought she was going back out. I didn't get the impression.
Okay. I thought that she'd just been, that was it, get your stuff.
You know, I am amazed with that you two are thinking that Jerry is even shakeable on this, because I think that Jerry knows where all the bodies are buried.
Yeah.
And she is incredibly useful. And there is no way that they can kick Jerry out of the company for being sexually harassed, and that's yeah. how she could present it, by one of the youngest siblings.
Would Roman have any proof that there was any reciprocation of it? I don't think he would he? She has been really smart.
She has all those conversations with him in person.
Yes. Haven't we seen all along her setting out boundaries?
Yeah. Yeah, the whole
I don't think they've had sex.
No, they haven't. I mean, this has come from one kind of half-assed kind of phone sex thing, and Roman locking himself in her toilet.
Yeah, at the last season when they went to that sort of
that retreat
tech startup. Yeah, that sort of thing in the
but again, that was him. That was him. To, you know, she could, and their whole game was that it was this who me kind of like you dirty bastard kind of thing. That was the whole kink, and she can now just turn around and just go, I wasn't playing.
Your Grace is right, though, because if she did get booted out, she said in this episode, you've been sending me messages like daily or whatever.
Yeah.
She could just leak those. Like, she's too powerful. Grace made a really good point, which is, or sorry, Jamie does. Made a good point.
Oh, me? Yes.
delete as appropriate. This might be how Ken gets back in.
Yeah.
Because I do think, and I know we're sort of going all over this week because our brains are completely fried by that episode, but I see Ken coming back in the fold and coming back in. And I wonder if it's just had to get to this like extreme, extreme point for him to come back.
Before we come on to Kendall, because that's the other big thing that we need to talk about. Let's just talk about, let's pick out a couple. There are three other kind of like funny-ish, kind of like lighter moments, even though they're all grim and dark. They were the light relief. Connor and the marriage proposal, which was a beautiful, beautiful moment. So correct me if I'm wrong, and this is just for any listeners that didn't pick up on either. So there was a piece being done on Connor and his kind of like political campaigns, which sounds like he knew it was a hatchet job, but he was trying to dress it up, where they basically cottoned onto the fact that she was, they met because when she was an escort, which means that they'll probably be able to tie back to the fact that she was, she ended up giving Tom his own semen.
That wasn't her.
Was that not her?
No, that was Tabitha.
Yes, you're right. Sorry. But
like Willa definitely.
But Willa definitely
in
was.
In a time before we all knew this family, he had her as an escort and then became attached. That and then it. Immediately started bringing her to things, didn't he?
Yeah, that was it.
And we've been kind of, if everything else hadn't been going on, because there's so many other storylines, this would have been an amazing major storyline but there's just we're so rich with storylines that we've kind of been sitting waiting for somebody to, you know,
to find that out.
Yeah. But I mean, people surely knew, but it's the fact that he now wants to be president. But then this is a lovely kind of reflection of people like Trump, isn't it? Because I'm not saying that his wife was an escort, but it's interesting, you know, where did these ladies come from?
Yeah. But it was also, you know, Connor's state of mind was, I know what'll solve this. Marry her. You know, that was like, that'll make the story
more
go away.
Attention.
It's just like,
also, and she did say in this, Willa said, what if we had a relationship where I live in New York?
Which is basically, I mean, they were outlining, you know, Trump and what's her face is, I can't remember her name. Melania's relationship.
I love where Willa's went this series because she is subtly brilliant. I love the fact that she's rising to this occasion of being a possible first lady. Yeah. And even though she clearly is in one of those relationships where she literally cringes when he touches her, when he touches the small of her back, she hates it. She doesn't want to be there, but how would you give up that lifestyle? How would you? I loved it when they turned up in, it was Tuscany, wasn't it? Was it Tuscany?
Yeah. Cortana, where I holidayed in that same village like 3 years ago. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
This is it.
Not when in that you, house they, like I had.
When they walk into the house and Willa's going, oh, Italy, oh my gosh, the house is so pretty. Yeah. And it's always so lovely. And there's all these people bringing their cases and Connor's just on his phone, isn't he? Because to him, this is, he might as well be a
utterly
haven. He's on a haven holiday, isn't he? And he's just looking at his phone. Because this is nothing to these people. But I thought at that moment, how would she give this up?
There was a Connor and Willa and then Tom and Shiv. Similar kind of like, you know, two couples, both on the cusp of just disintegrating. But Shiv and Tom, I can't work it out. I cannot work out what is going on or what's going to happen. You know, for her, she obviously got like pumped full of adrenaline and kind of like caught up in the moment. She's like, yeah, let's have a baby. And then...
Yeah, let's have a baby,
it was a real glimpse into kind of, into richness, into rich people's way of thinking. Because to her, I think she actually meant, let's make a baby now. And then immediately started to say, shit, how the hell do I get out of this? And then it was freezing embryos and then it was 10 years time. And Tom was just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I thought it was a clever device because they always say that before you marry somebody, you know, the questions like, where would you ideally like to live? And how do you feel about babies? And the other ones, you know, how do you feel about religion? They're the big questions you really have to ask because it just explodes so much stuff that's going to, you know, everything. So that, you know, the question about the babies, it kept simmering through, didn't it? Because there was even the bit where, well, if we freeze the egg and I die, would you have my baby or would you want me to have? And you could see her just thinking, no, to be quite honest, if you were hit by a car tomorrow, it would be a massive relief.
Do me a favor.
Because I could grieve for a little bit.
It'd be a miracle if she wasn't driving. Yeah.
So his Shiv's like, if you were hit by a car tomorrow, I'd be on Hinge by the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Super liking people. I think though, the the urgency to get the baby was because her mum rattled her so brilliantly. And we spend a lot of the time talking about how all the kids, their relationship with Logan, and of course their mum, Caroline, like we don't get to see that much. And she really rattled Shiv by being like, "You and me, babe, like we weren't supposed to be mothers." And she's like, "Well, I'll show you."
You know, that scene with them both sitting on that sofa, if that had just gone on for an hour, it would have been an Emmy winning, you know, exploration of mothers and daughters. Because, you know, I absolutely adored my mother, and I'm sure there's tons of women listening to this who adore their mothers, but that is a very, that they're the kind of conversations you have where suddenly your mother will turn around and say, "Well, you were a piece of work when you were a child," or, yeah, you know, or, you know, "Oh, I should never have had you," really. Sure. Caroline is a thoroughly horrible person. Yeah. She has not got a redeeming aspect about her, apart from the fact that she is clearly, she's charismatic. You can't take your eyes off her. She's moneyed. And she's clearly hung around with a set where she's been the queen bee.
Yeah.
But aside from that, she is thoroughly horrible. And I love this new man that's come along who she just slags him off anyway. She sees him as a horrible social climber who...
So why is she marrying him? I couldn't work that out. She kept, like, you know, he had no redeeming features. She hated him. He had no money.
He's fun though. Isn't he fun? Look at him sparkling away like a cheap bottle of Prosecco. And he's just...
I think the interesting thing is she looks down on him. She's better than him. And in the Roy family, she was the one that didn't have any status. And the thing I took from that whole thing was she's checked out of the power plays, the business dealings. She just wants to like have a slightly whimsical life. And I sort of can't blame her. And I kind of thought that was really interesting that she isn't trying to impress anyone with this guy. Like, she's not, like, his smoked salmon business went down the can. And he lost his flat in Pimlico. And by all accounts, like, the metrics that the Roys use, like, he's a total failure. But she seemed not happy, but certainly not miserable with him.
I read a good fan theory today that said that he's actually Kendall's dad.
Oh my god.
Because do you remember that when
43 years he's been sniffing around?
He goes something like 40 years he's been sniffing around, and then it was, "Oh, it's his 40th birthday." Oh, and then she said, and he went, "How many kids has he got?" And he said, "Oh, he's got oh, he's got four kids." And Caroline went, "He's got more than that, darling."
Oh my god!
And someone said today they were like, they're laying the eggs that Logan's gonna say it's not even my kid.
Oh my god! I love that.
I love that. That would be an amazing season finale. Holy shit! That's a great
finale. Yeah. More and more like Dallas, isn't it? As it goes on,
and we're lapping it up.
But that line when she came out and she saw Kendall for the first time, you know, and she went, "Oh, have you been at the front? Oh, you look tired," and then just hit him with, "Well, there's a huge itinerary, and we're going to divide it up because your father's going to be here and doesn't want to see you." Well, fair enough. That was bad enough. But then she said that this idiot that she's marrying, "Oh, he just wants all the important people at his wedding." And it was the idea that she completely accepted this grotesque man's hollow soulless, you know, social climbing, and I'm going to say swear word, star fucking, apart from, you know, rather than trying to honour a son. To me, I just thought that, and it's really strange, that has stuck with me all day. I've been walking around after watching this episode and I keep thinking, how would you do that to your son at your wedding? Didn't you walk up and ask for a cash for honour or something?
Yeah, he basically wanted an introduction to government, didn't he? To UK government.
Yeah, some parliamentary people. Because he runs these old folks' homes that are...
Right. He wants me to get the dipshits in Downing Street to make him Lord fucking Seat Sniffer Pantyhose.
Also, just want to quickly comment on, that is the most, like, exclusive and non-exclusive wedding guest list I've ever seen. Kendall's not allowed to go to the ceremony, but his publicist is there. Jerry's there, who's like Logan's colleague. Also, Jerry's husband or boyfriend Laurie is now there. Like,
yes.
Who designed this guest list and why wasn't I invited? Because it was amazing. Everyone else seems to have gone.
Sorry, something's just, I think we've answered our own question. Why is she marrying him? Why is she marrying this guy? And then Logan keeps saying he's a pantyhose seat sniffer. So there's clearly some story that's followed this guy around that he's a sexual deviant.
Maybe he's Roman's dad.
That would be amazing. I'd love a paternity plotline.
Jamie, too much. Don't. I need to sleep tonight. Should we talk about the untalkable?
Let's talk about the darkness of the episode, because it was horrifically dark. First of all, the kind of showdown meeting between Kendall and Logan, which was tense enough as it was, but then you know, they really just lent into the whole Godfather-esque element of it, and it turned into, like, it reminded me of the scene like with Christoph Waltz at the beginning of Inglourious Basterds in the kind of like where the Jews are underneath the floorboards, the bit where you know, you thought it was a gag at first, the point, you know, they're staring at the salad, and like Kendall did that mozzarella salad, and Kendall did the joke about, I'll take that one. Almost, I think he just did that as a kind of like piss take, right? Mm. But then Logan, there was, not only did Logan, genuinely think that Kendall might try to off him via mozzarella, he decided the best way of doing that was to make Kendall's son eat it in front of Kendall. Logan hates Kendall now, like, genuinely doesn't seem to, at that point, just hated him, doesn't care about his kids. He like showed that he doesn't even care about his own grandkids enough to try that food himself. Completely threw back Kendall's last kind of like chance saloon of just like, please just kill me, was what he was saying.
Don't you think Logan enjoys the hate though? Because this is what Caroline, I do keep saying Caroline, it is Caroline, isn't it? His first wife.
Yeah.
Well, Caroline is his second wife, because Connor's mum would be the first one.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris. What Caroline,
Jeremy Kyle of Succession over here.
I know you are. What Caroline said was that they couldn't have even had a dog, because what he enjoys doing is kicking things to see how much he can kick them until they come back. Mm. They still come back. And I just thought, when we watched that really tense conversation between the two of them, he was just enjoying the anger, Logan. Didn't he say, he said something about, well, maybe I'll want you near. Kendall is saying, just let me go. I'll take the money. You'll never see me again. And Logan's saying, no, I want to put you in the post room.
Yeah, maybe you're going to be the one that runs it. And he was almost still throwing out that thing.
I thought last week that the offer to buy Kendall out, you know, cash in and fuck off, I think he said.
Yeah.
I thought that was genuine. And actually now, I think Logan hates his son, but he wants his son near, as Jamie said. And I think, like, the idea of walking away, the idea of not being part of this, is unthinkable to Logan. And I think he'll put all of his children and his grandchildren through hell. But, like, I think he still wants them there. And I think I got the impression that, yeah, Logan was like, look, we will get you back in the company and do something. Even if you're, what did he say? Even if you're posting.
Even if you're in the mail.
Even if you're in the mail. Yeah. And that's interesting to me, because that's how the mafia think, which is that you're always going to be in this. You're never leaving. And
I thought Kendall played it so badly, though. You know, to sit down, he started off well by, you know, he was much reduced and wobbly-lipped and just broken. And he said the things that his father would want to hear. He said, you've won. I'll take the money. You'll never see me again. You've won. And it started off well. And then it turned into, because you're evil. I thought, no, just leave it. If you want the $2 billion, just say, I made a massive mistake.
And that's the thing, though, is that, like, the thing I still can't get my head around is that Kendall thinks his awakening, which is in the timeline of the show, has been about 3 months ago, maybe. He thinks he's so virtuous by being like, I'm a revolutionary, you're evil. And Logan is correct to say, you've been here the whole time.
Yes.
And you know what goes on. Like, you were aware of this. You've not wanted to change this at all. And you've been trying to upseat me since season one when you just thought I was too ill and frail to run the company. And I did feel myself sort of siding with Logan, being like, yeah, you actually really are ungrateful. Like Logan, obviously we got to talk about the waiter that died in season one. This is the first time the show's really overtly addressed the elephant in the room. And we've been waiting for this for a long time now. And he really just came out and said it. Like, I covered up your involvement in someone's death.
Alex Dodd's death? Is that his name?
Yes, yeah. I think that's his name. He said, I covered this up for you and you still want to like bury me. Like, how dare Kendall sort of kind of behave the way he did in a way?
It feels with Kendall's plastic Jesus act, that's what they've been calling him throughout the series, is this idea of that he is virtuous and he's a game changer and that he is the future. It always feels as if he crowdsourced that from Twitter, because there was a very specific point. I think it was around the point when, you know, Barry Schneider PR were, you know, taken on, that they're kind of reading these things, you know, good tweet, bad tweet. And the good tweets, we all know what Twitter's like. It's, you know, the good ones are great. The good ones that were, this guy is really changing, he's changing the world, he's pushing, he's blah, 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 blah. And Kendall thinks that, but he did get that off Twitter. I don't think he's got one single thing up his sleeve that he's done. In fact, everything he's done for the entire series has been shady, you know, suddenly, you know, playing Rape Me really loudly through a stereo isn't really helping anybody.
No.
Shouting fuck the patriarchy at a black tie dinner. These are the only things he's really done.
It was an episode awash with metaphors. You know, the water is still clearly a part of Kendall's life. You know, as you pointed out, Grace, he ended season one in the bath. He started season three in the bath, and now he ended this episode face down in a swimming pool. Obviously, there's a direct link to Logan's real twisting the knife. How long do you think he was sucking up? How long do you think he was sucking water for? 2 minutes, 3 minutes? That must have been awful. Which was just evil.
It's almost unspeakable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an unspeakable thought.
But he knew. But like, he always knew.
The writers just got into the thing that you would torture yourself with. You know, torture about his family and all these things. What you would think about was, how long did he know he was going to die?
Logan's the only one that sinned Kendall in that state. If you remember in the drawing room at the Scottish, you know, the wedding at the end of season one, when Kendall broke down, when he kind of said, I've got this for you, you're going to go to rehab and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And Kendall kind of like turned into the kind of 12-year-old boy and kind of shook and cried. Logan knew from then on in, right, this is how I get him. And he's just waited. He's just bided his time.
Well, they didn't leave him in rehab very long. I think that's the whole point, that, you know, that how long was he there before? It was some guy, just some strange Icelandic man turned up.
Someone came and picked him up, didn't they? Yeah.
Was Kendall, okay, question for both of you. What was Kendall doing there? Was he trying to, was he doing that thing that you did as a kid and kind of held your breath and see how long you can hold your breath for? Was he, where was his head then, Chris?
I think he was really pissed, and I think he was nodding
pissed
off.
As in UK pissed?
Or as in UK pissed, right. As in like he'd had a few beers by the pool because he's got nothing else to do, and he's literally flopped in. I mean, I think the parallels with Logan asking him earlier in the episode, how long do you think he was breathing before he started sucking in water? I think maybe it's at the forefront of Kendall's mind at that point, but I think it's a bit of a, I think this whole cliffhanger is a bit of a false start. I think because all it takes is for one of his kids to come back to get their iPad, dad's face down, they can get him out in minutes. And I do think, I'm not sure how to read it. I'd love to know what you two think as well.
I think you'd like to think that even in his standing in the Roy family, there would still always be someone watching them. You know, there'd always be an assistant or a housekeeper or a pool guy, or they'd always be, they're never truly alone, are they?
Well, no. I mean, I disagree with both of you, and I think that I don't know anything at all. I haven't done a lot of snooping around the internet to try and work out whether Kendall, that's the end of the road for him. But what I instinctively feel is that if it was, it's been perfectly set up, hasn't it? All the signifiers we've had over the last few episodes, it feels much more in keeping that he's been slowly dosing himself up with painkillers and drugs and whatever. Yeah. And he's been drinking continually glasses of wine here and there. And he's got into the pool and he's going to have one of those seedy rich person's deaths that you hear about, you know, when they fly their helicopters into the side of mountains or they end up in paparazzi chases or they just die in swimming pools. And it feels more fitting for that to be the end of his storyline. What I felt I was watching was him nodding out like we all can when we've had a few drinks and he's got his beer. And when the beer bottle started to float, for me, I thought that's the moment. That's the moment where he's now starting to inhale water exactly like that boy. And I think it was interesting that I don't think it was suicide. I think it was misadventure. Mm. And if it was misadventure, isn't that exactly what the other Alex, I forget the waiter's name.
Alex Dodds.
Isn't that what Alex died? Or was it, wasn't that meant to be misadventure?
That was why they defined it, because he was intoxicated when he died. They put it down to that, I think. And to your point, thematically, it is kind of perfect because there is a sense of where's he going to go next? He's finally had his confessional with his dad. He's not even trying to bluster anymore. Yeah. He's saying, I just want out. I don't even want to come to your funeral. I don't even want to inherit anything. And obviously it doesn't seem like he was trying to take his life, which is something we were talking about earlier before we recorded. But I do think he learned in this episode that as long as he is a Roy and as long as he is alive, he's always going to be in that family. And taking his life would get him away from his father. Seems to be the only way. Mm. And I sort of thought there was something kind of interesting in that.
Chris, you are so good at snooping around the internet. So getting away from the actual scene in the pool, what do you think that you know? I've heard that, what is the actor called? The name has gone
Jeremy Strong.
Jeremy, the wonderful Jeremy Strong. Somebody was saying today that Jeremy Strong has got lots of very, very good prestige acting roles lined up. Other people have said that, if this was just his story arc, it's not as if he would be kind of saying, well, I don't understand. I need to be in this, because it's he keeps himself as an actor. Method, himself away. Maybe he delivered such an amazing performance all the way through this because he kept himself away from all the other actors. And he ultimately knew he was going to die in a pool at the end of this episode. I feel strongly that this could be the end. Just because I think that for the storyline, which is what they're so faithful to, the writers, it will be electric if they have to. Every single one of those siblings is going to have to live with how they've treated him for the last few months.
Jamie, what do you think about this?
I think, well,
go on.
Obviously, I don't know anything. I've not spoken to anyone about it. All I can surmise is that, you know, he clearly, you know, if you've read any kind of like the profile pieces on Jeremy Strong, of which there are some crackers, there's a great one in New Yorker.
The Michael Shulman one that dropped 2 hours before the episode went out yesterday, which I think in and of itself is fascinating.
Yeah.
The timing of that.
Revealed, I think, said a lot about his kind of standing about. It's clearly extremely exhausting to him to play Kendall. And as a byproduct of that, it seems to be pretty exhausting for everybody else on the cast and on the crew, you know, to kind of, I guess, enable him to be Kendall Roy. I think it's a bit Kit Harington-y, kind of like fucking hell, how can the show exist without Jon Snow / Kendall Roy? And I think what this, and there was a really good article just pointed out that this felt very much like, how would the Roys cope without Kendall? And the answer is, and I mean, not in a ton of, in a kind of a plot point kind of way, but in just like the show, because even without Kendall's storyline, you've got an incredible kind of episode there, you know, with the dick pic with Shiv and Tom. You've got all this stuff going on anyway. I think the reluctance to kill off someone like Kendall would have still been there in season two. I wonder where else he can go. I don't think there's anything left for Kendall to do. And I think it would be cheesy for him to kind of have a complete turn on a sixpence and kind of like get off the, you know, swim to the edge of the pool, dust himself off and go and see Alexander Skarsgård and pull a deal out of their bag and just turn up at the wedding and go, no, wait, I've got Gojo. It's my way or the highway. And then Logan's like, ugh! You know, I think that would... That would be a bit naff.
Nobody ever said, I tell you what, Game of Thrones really improved when Jon Snow came back from the dead and started turning up at places going, oh, I almost died, or whatever it was, you know.
Everyone would be like, yeah, remember when your heart stopped? And they'd go, what was that about? And he's like, shh. I'm like, what?
I'm legally obliged to just to say I love Game of Thrones and every single sentence.
I would say Succession is not a sensationalist show, and I think a big plot point being one of the main characters dies and everyone has to sort of start reacting. I don't know, in the same way that we don't have to watch them go through a pandemic, I don't know if I want to watch, like, what does it look like when Shiv's grieving? Like, it just sounds like it's almost like from another show.
I don't think you could write a script where suddenly Shiv is lost in grief. I loved her this week when she decided to call into the meeting and I thought, oh God, she's really turned a corner. She's decided she's going to, you know, dial back from this slightly evil Shiv. And then within about four scenes, she's like, right, back at it.
To your point, Grace, is he kind of booked and busy? I mean, a lot of the cast have done things between two and three, like Nicholas Braun did Zola, Jeremy Strong did Trial of the Chicago Seven. I think the schedule is not so mad that they couldn't fit stuff in around it. And
also, just to clarify, he would have been signed up for every season of this. He'd have been locked in.
It did make me think, though, that I could see the show just doing one more season. I've always thought they'd do five, but the way that the character's gone so far, part of me goes, yeah, what do you do for two seasons? Is it one more season left and we kind of tie it all up? I mean, I could sort of see it. But to your point, Jamie, what do we do with him? I mean, I think the show will always find storylines that put people in certain positions. I mean, Roman sort of going to like an embassy in the UAE and sort of being hostage taken at one point, that sort of came out of nowhere. And yeah, it sort of made sense. And I think there's definitely mileage in a lot of things to go, especially
the presidential thing.
The presidential thing, definitely. And I think this Gojo thing has sort of become something else from last week. Last week it was about acquiring it, and Skarsgård has played this card this week and said, actually, we're worth just as much and we need to merge, which is huge. Like, in corporate terms, this is AOL, Time Warner, Diet Pepsi Cola.
And that always goes so well. Yeah.
And it actually, we talked about this quite a few episodes ago now. We keep thinking about who are they going to absorb to become big. And one of the things that would be fascinating is, what if they get absorbed?
Yeah.
What if Skarsgård's company goes, no, actually, you join us. And that means all the board seats that Waystar have.
Logan was quite into that idea, wasn't he? He was surprisingly amenable.
Plot-wise, I instinctively want Kendall to be dead because I know that's macabre, but plot-wise, I almost want them all to see what was going on in front of their eyes, that they were all so lost in power and hype and the pursuit of whatever it is that they need or want, that they all contributed to that. And I almost want to see that, you know, from a kind of a satisfying point of view. And also, I'm kind of done with watching, you know, Kendall turn up like a ghost in places. And there's, you know, he's just a ghoul now, isn't he? Who kind of turns up and hovers in the background of places and goes, oh, where's my father? Oh, you've got to get out. Oh, I need to see my father. What's left for him to do?
So interesting. Yeah. If
that was going to happen, wouldn't he have kind of like left something to, take Logan down in flames. He'd have framed Logan. He'd have framed it to make it look like Logan had killed him. That would be
well. The what I learned from the podcast that was sniffing around wanting to talk about the death of that of the boy was that is beginning to gain traction.
Yeah. The other thing is, I kind of wondered if the shaved head, the reborn, there's a lot of repentance and a lot of like guilt. And I had this idea earlier, which was what if he confesses? Yes. What if he confesses to the family, or what if he goes on the podcast?
What if he just went to the police?
Yes. What if he goes on the podcast?
And I thought he was going to say, I'll do that.
Because the way that he can be free of his father's, what his father did for him is if it stops being a secret and he goes.
Maybe he's already done it.
Maybe. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Maybe he's already done it.
Rather than the press conference from last season, it's him just sitting down and going, this is what happened and I'm going to turn myself in. Because in prison, he's almost as free from his father as he's ever going to be alive.
That's a good one.
You're right. He could just, that could be the closing part.
Safest. Tom has been researching all the prisons. Next thing you know,
just picked
Ken
up the
goes
folder.
To the nice prison with the Jewish rending machine. Call me Jesse Armstrong if you're listening.
We've got one episode left. All throughout this series of The Boardroom, we've been kind of like trying to pick what ending. I dread to, we will before we start next week's, go back and listen to what we all said at the beginning of episode one.
Oh my God.
Guarantee it won't be anything, which is testament to Jesse. I think Tom was definitely in prison. Greg was, God knows what Greg was. We haven't discussed Greg. Greg kind of disappointingly disappeared off the face of the earth. We certainly didn't plan for a lot of what happened. What is our best guess at next week's finale? Grace Dent.
I am going to shamelessly attach myself to an excellent theory that Chris came up with about 70 seconds ago, which is that, I think that if Kendall has survived, I think that what Kendall needs to be cleansed, and I think he needs to confess. He just needs to walk into a police station, or he goes on a podcast, he sits down with them and he says, I did it.
I mean, I can't come up with anything else on the fly. This
has got theories coming out of his ears, though. Chris, you're so good at this.
What I would say to sort of reinforce that is, I think this show is about Logan and Kendall.
Yeah.
It's that relationship, and it's not about all the kids. It's about Logan and Ken. And so I think every season we're seeing elements of that relationship, and it only stands to reason that this thing about the waiter, the busboy, it has to come out soon, because it's the only way there's going to be something new. They can't have that conversation again. Like, they've had it now. So I think something along those lines. I mean, I thought, what did I say last week? Shiv was going to get fired. Tom's going to be president. Shiv's pregnant. They get divorced.
We've all kind of thought that ultimately there's room for them just all to be sitting around the same table in that boardroom in the final scene.
Has there been a trailer for next week? Have we seen a trailer?
I haven't seen it.
Are we allowed?
You know what I'm like. Of course. Of course I will.
Will it be spoilery to talk about it? I guess it would. I guess it reveals whether Kendall's alive or dead, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't. Actually, he's not in the trailer. So.
Okay, Chris, was the wedding happening?
Still the wedding.
Okay, right. But then maybe he hadn't been found. Oh no, he would have been found. Because
I know some people that don't watch the trailer at all, and I'm like, how can you not? But one thing I would like to speculate on for the finale is Tom and Shiv. And there was a line in this episode that Caroline said, which we've already referenced, which is that Logan likes to kick you to see if you come back. And that is exactly what Shiv does with Tom. And what I would love to see is Tom to sort of break that and not come back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whether that involves her going, him going, again, like last season, they were breaking up on that little inlet. They were sort of having their argument. Nothing's improved. I would love to see Tom reclaim some agency. He's such a sweetheart.
He is a sweetheart, Chris. He is a sweetheart. But when he refused sex because he said that it would be pointless, like throwing cake batter, I thought, mate, like that would be the last thing that anyone said to me. And then for her to turn around this time and just look at him and say, oh, but you know, I don't love you, but I love you. And I thought,
that's her talking dirty. It's
okay, like, right, this is over. Ring a lawyer now.
We've got a week to go before the finale, succession of finale of this boardroom. It's tense. Do join us. Do let us know what you think at previous.
Have we been invited to the HBO C-suite to watch the final episode? Or
is there? Is that what's happening?
I don't know.
No,
I didn't.
It didn't even happen for Game of Thrones, mate. It's all about the premieres with HBO. Who knows?
They did a, irrelevant to this podcast, they did do a good thing in after season two at the Prince Charles.
Oh, that's right, they did, didn't they?
Wow. I went all the way to West London.
I certainly haven't been invited. Right, see you next week. Head down, bum up.
Bye-bye.